Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. Back in 2019, I sat down with Richie T. of the Culture Hall podcast, and he has an interesting podcast. You should definitely check it out. But we're going to talk about my background and how I got started with Gospel Tangents. Check out our conversation.
A message to people listening to this in the future. You won't care that this episode was published a little later in the day. But to everyone who's been checking their newsfeed and saying, you know what, there should be an episode there by now, I want you to know, first of all, I am sorry that I did not get it done sooner. And second of all, I want you to know that it isn't from me not working on the Cultural Hall this week. It's just working on other things that we do here in the Cultural Hall. Hey, it's me, Richie. Richie T, if you want to get specific. If this is your first episode in the Cultural Hall, I just encourage you to go back. There are now 509 previous episodes before this one, and we talk about all sorts of things. I've been reminiscing, actually, because what I was working on this week was making the old archived episodes available for those who are Patreon Saints of the Cultural Hall. You can go to patreon.com/thecultural hall, and if you you do a little thing in there, you pay a little money, you can have really easy access to all of our old episodes. And I was looking, like, when we talked to the missionary who baptized Jody Arias, the woman down in Arizona who killed her boyfriend, who was a member of the church. That was an interesting one. We talked with someone who was at the Boston Marathon bombings almost a decade ago now. That's how long we've been around. And so it's been super fun for me to see some of these old episodes. And now they're available. Patreon.com/thecultural hall. A huge shout out to Patreon Saint Joy Hollinghouse. She has been helping out and making this all possible and making it move super quick. If you have been holding out on being a Patreon Saint of the Cultural Hall, you really should do it. At the end of the month, we're going to let the yearly subscription go away for a while. So hopefully that will motivate you to become a Patreon Saint. Great, and more things coming, like this episode. There's no shade thrown on Rick Bennett. We talked a little while ago, and now I'm taking the opportunity to share this. Rick is not only a great podcaster, a great friend now because of this interview, and encourage, if you like really deep dives on different things. Like, he goes as far as like 13 episodes on some of the subject matters that he does. It's over at Gospel Tangents. You'll find all about his podcast as we talk with Rick Bennett in this episode of The Cultural Hall.
It's time for another episode of The Cultural Hall, and I'm able to sit down with Rick Bennett. Now, you hear that name, and here was the deal. I was talking with my buddy Kurt Frankum over at Leading Saints. He said, have you ever had Rick Bennett on the show before? And I said, no, I haven't. But Rick Bennett is one of those names that I'm like, I feel like I know 10 Rick Bennetts, right? Like, it's a common enough of a name, or like, you know, like I could say out loud, hey, you know Rick Bennett? And I could affirmatively say yes, knowing that somewhere in the culmination of people that I know, there has been a Rick Bennett. But this particular Rick Bennett, he is the host of the Gospel Tangents podcast. So I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about that. He's a church history nerd, so we'll try and avoid getting really deep into that stuff, he and I. But I also want to get a chance to get to know him. Welcome to the Cultural Hall, Rick.
Glad to be on the show. This is great. And now, by the way, I'm the second Rick Bennett in my family, I should say. Not unique. That's
for sure. Are you a junior? Is that how that works?
I am a junior. Yep, that's right.
So is there
third? And by the way, there's a BYU professor named Richard E. Bennett. And so I call him my much shorter twin. He's a lot shorter than I am. So he's from Canada, though. My dad's from New Jersey. So anyway.
Born in the USA. That's what you are. Now, let me ask you this. Is the Richard E. Bennett at BYU, is he a history or religion professor? Does it get crowded or complicated as far as that goes?
Oh, yes. He's actually, I've interviewed him on my podcast, believe it or not. He's a big time church history nerd like me. So
yeah,
even more of a history nerd than me, probably.
I hope that episode was called Richard E. Bennett Squared. If it wasn't, you missed, you missed a great opportunity on that.
I need to have you help me title my stuff.
Listen, you can call me anytime. People know that. Now, let's get to you. You said Jersey born. So how did we get from New Jersey to here?
So, well, you're talking about my dad. So my dad grew up in New Jersey, non-Mormon, really rough life, joined the Air Force at 17, forged his dad's signature to get in, met a Hawaiian girl in South Dakota, believe it or not.
Oh, that's how you do it.
She introduced him to the church. And then after he got out of the Air Force, they said, well, where do you want to live? And he said, well, not that I'm a Mormon, I'll live in Utah. And so that's where he met my mom, and that's how he got to Utah. So I grew up mostly in Utah. I lived about 4 years in New Hampshire. My dad took a job back east, and so I got to see the East Coast a little bit, and then South Carolina on my mission. So I've been kind of on both coasts, but mostly Utah. So
it's an interesting road for your dad. Let's get into that a little bit more, as to much as you know about it. He meets a girl, and I'm assuming is that your mom?
In South Dakota? No, that was not my mom.
Oh, that was just, so he meets a girl that he sort of likes and then joins the church. Was it a slow road?
I don't know a lot about that story. It sounded like they wanted to get married and it didn't work out for some reason. I don't know. So I could have been half Hawaiian, I guess, but
if you want to know, honestly, I was trying to figure it out. For people that are watching this, that are Patreon subscribers, they're able to see the video of this, and I'm looking at you, and I was trying to find like Hawaiian features within you, and then I was like, no, it must not have been who ended up being his mom. So how did?
Yeah, my mom's from Idaho.
Okay. So he came to Utah and then met your mom. What is that like?
Oh wow, that was, you know, it's funny because I dated my wife for over a year, and my dad was married within 3 months of meeting my mom. So he was a much faster mover than me. But they met at a church dance, and in fact, he was interested in some other girl. And then anyway, I don't really know how it worked out, but it went fast. Once it went fast. So.
And are you the first in your family?
I'm the first boy. Apparently, my two older sisters were supposed to be Richard Jr., and then I came along. So,
and so an upbringing. Now, when I picture someone from the Air Force and sort of a convert, I think of a fairly strict upbringing as far as the church goes. Am I correct in my assumptions?
You are very correct. Very military background. So, yeah, my dad was extremely strict. That's for sure.
Give me an idea what that was like.
Well, it really was a lot like the military. He learned a lot of discipline in the military. My dad was kind of a juvenile delinquent, just a little bit of background. Apparently, he was told by a judge that you can either go to jail or you can go in the military. And so he went in the military. And the reason why, like, you know, the weird thing is I got a message on Family Search. I'm actually big into genealogy. And this guy by the name of Ralston messaged me, and he says, how are you related to Irene Ralston? And at first I didn't recognize the name, so I had to look it up. And then I'm like, oh, that's my grandma. I never met her. Mm-hmm. She died in the 70s. I was very young, and I never met her. And so I said, oh, that's my grandma. And then he said, oh, I'm your dad's cousin. I haven't seen him since he was 15. And so this is just, you know, 3-4 years ago, I actually did meet him, and it was really nice because my dad really grew up in a broken home. I don't want to get too far into it, sure. but at any rate, talking to my dad's cousin, you know, he said, really, my dad kind of grew up as a Depression era child, mm-hmm. and so everybody was poor. Everybody was unsupervised. Everybody was a juvenile delinquent. Everybody smoked. Like, that was just the way they grew up. And so my dad's cousin basically said that he understood why dad wanted to get away from New Jersey, because all he had was bad memories of New Jersey.
Yeah.
So joining the Air Force shaped him up discipline-wise, and then joining the church shaped him up spiritual-wise. And so, you know, my dad was a high school dropout, so I'm very different than he was. You know, I've graduated from college and things like that. And so I did have a little bit of a tough life growing up with my dad. We didn't always get along well. You know, he was a very strict disciplinarian, very physical. And so I've tried to be different with my kids, but yeah, it was tough growing up with him, but you know, he had a strong testimony to church, and we went to church pretty much every week. And, you know, he definitely wanted me to serve a mission and that sort of a thing. So
what was that decision like to serve a mission? You said South Carolina?
Yeah, I was called to South Carolina. I served a third of my mission in Georgia. And
that's part of the same mission? Was that part of the same mission, or did you just go rogue and decided that you wanted to go somewhere else?
Yeah, we covered about the eastern half of Georgia, or eastern third of Georgia. I started my mission south of Savannah, Fort Jackson, or Fort Stewart, excuse me. I was at an Army base everywhere I went, it felt like. So I started at Fort Stewart, Georgia, ended my mission at Augusta. I went to the Masters tournament. And so Billy Casper was there. I don't know if we got any golf fans. Billy just died a few years ago. He was probably in his 70s when I saw him. I remember I ran into Billy Casper at a jazz game 5-6 years ago, probably. And I said, "Hey, I'm sure you don't remember me, but we saw you at the Masters." And he said, "You missionaries are everywhere." So I'm sure we weren't the only ones that stopped him on the golf course, but it was funny.
Now, what was that experience like? Give me the idea of the years that you served there in the South Carolina mission, and what was the work like down there?
So, you know, I got to know the my Bible really well.
I would imagine.
I don't want to brag. I'll brag a little bit.
Brag it.
I was one of the top scriptorians in the mission. We had to memorize 180 scriptures.
Wow.
They had the first 45 made you a celestial missionary. The next 45 made you a terrestrial missionary. And then you had to do 90 to become a celestial missionary. And they were really good at Bible for Bible bashing. And so I did my share. Mm-hmm.
That's always the way that people end up getting converted, by the way, for people that are listening. If you can bash hard enough and back them into a corner, ultimately what people will do is they'll just say, "You know what? You're right. I need to change my faith. My beliefs are completely false. I'll go ahead and join what you're telling me to do." That's how Bible bashing always ends, if anyone's curious.
Yeah, it didn't work out quite that well. But I will tell you what, if you do know your scriptures well, I remember I got put in a threesome with two zone leaders for about a week. One of them was going AP, and it was all hush-hush, which I never understand why everything has to be hush-hush in the church, but whatever. And I can remember these two zone leaders were outstanding missionaries. And I remember going to a door, and a woman wanted to kind of bash a little bit, but my companion did it in a non-confrontational way. Mm-hmm. And I remember looking at him and going, "Dang, wow, that's amazing." And so I became a lot less confrontational and more explanatory. And it was amazing because that does work well. Mm-hmm. At first, I just wanted to argue, and you know, arguing doesn't change anybody's hearts. But if you do it in an explanatory way, I was just amazed because you could just pull those scriptures out, and it was really useful, actually. So I would just recommend for any prospective missionaries. I don't know if you have young listeners out there.
Sure.
But do it in an explanatory way, not in a contentious way. And it is, you can change hearts. It's really great. It's good to know all those scriptures.
Yeah. So let me not backtrack necessarily, but maybe further explain what I was saying. It's important that you know what you're teaching people. I can remember multiple times serving my mission. I was not as educated maybe as I should have been as I went out to serve. Like people that have been longtime listeners of the Cultural Hall will remember I shared an experience from the MTC where it finally dawned on me that the Book of Mormon was Christ's dealing with the people in the Americas. And I was like, "Do you guys know this? Do you guys realize that that's what this book is about?" Like, it finally dawned on me, and everyone else was like, "Yeah, that's what, how did you not know this particular?" Anyway, so I didn't know that much, but I remember going out and being in the field and having people tell me things about the church that I had no idea about, and then having to study and ponder and figure out how I felt about those things and then be able to teach through those things was sort of where I was converted, was actually out serving and teaching people. Maybe not the way we should go about it, but certainly the way I went about it.
Well, I think all missionaries go out with good intentions, but bad skills.
even the greatest, right? There's still so many skills, and depending on where you serve and all that, was it the South and your love and learning of the Bible that caused you to become a church history nerd, or where did that come in?
So when did I become a church history nerd? So the coolest thing was I got married in about 2000, and I think it was 2001 or so. my sister said, hey, let's go for the Nauvoo Temple open house. And I remember visiting a lot of Community of Christ sites because they're in Nauvoo as well.
Mm-hmm.
And just falling in love with Nauvoo. I remember my mom told me that one of my institute teachers, I went to Weber State, great, great, great.
Yep.
And
bleeding purple, I got you.
That's right. So one of my institute teachers, who was also a former bishop of mine, had written a book about what, in fact, the book was called What Happened to the Family of Joseph Smith. And I just love this book because I didn't know anything. I didn't know that Emma had gotten remarried after Joseph died. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what happened to her children, really. You know, of course, Joseph Smith III went on to become leader of the RLDS Church. And I probably kind of knew that, but it was just fascinating. And I think that's really where my love of church history came. And then about,
hang on real quick before we move on, what's the name of that bishop and author of that book?
So it's Gerald Johansson.
Okay.
And it's the funniest thing. I had another institute teacher named Gerald Lund, who is not the general authority, but he was a fantastic teacher as well.
The unfortunately named Gerald Lund, who is not the church apostle. Yeah.
So What Happened to the Family of Joseph Smith, I believe, was the title. And it's actually a very short book, especially when you compare it to like Rough Stone Rolling or some of these others. And so it was really cool. I remember that really got me interested. And then it's probably about 12 years ago that I joined the Mormon History Association. I started going to Sunstone and I dove in deep. And then I think one of my first Mormon History Association meetings was in Independence, Missouri. And have you been to Independence?
I have, recently? In fact, yeah. Yep.
So the coolest thing is you've got the Community of Christ Temple in the center.
Yeah.
And then just south of there, you've got the LDS Visitor Center.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the corner, you have the RLDS Auditorium, which is kind of their tabernacle.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another RLDS church. And then you've got the Temple Lot Church. And then you have the Stone Church, which is the oldest church in Missouri. It was built by Joseph Smith III. Then over here, you've got the Remnant Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints headquarters. So you've got like these four churches directly surrounding this. And it's not really a square, but it's like a true temple square. And I've often said it was like Mormon Disneyland. Like, it's so cool. But, you know, it's Disneyland going to church. So I went to church at the Stone Church. I went to the church at the Temple Lot Church for a few minutes. Of course, they all meet at the same time. So
So you have to the whole meeting. So you have to pick which one. Yeah,
exactly. And then there was this one church on the corner, Community of Christ Church. And I got there just as it was ending. And they had guitars and drums, and I was like, this is like Holy Roller Mormons. Like, I never knew such a thing existed. And so it was just really, really fun. And actually, down the street, about what, three or four blocks, is the Cutlerite Church, and they only have about 8 members, but that church was founded by Alpheus Cutler. I went back 2 years ago and got a tour of the church. And really wanted to interview them on my podcast, and they didn't. They said no. But I talked to the woman for about 2 hours, and it was just so awesome. it was a lot of fun.
Now, for people that don't know what a Cutlerite is, where do they branch off from the original Joseph Church?
So Alpheus Cutler, if you look in your Doctrine and Covenants, I don't remember which section, you will see Alpheus Cutler. He was an early church leader under Joseph Smith. And I believe, I'd have to look at the sign again, I believe it says it was reorganized in 1853. And so basically he didn't follow Brigham Young West. You know, the interesting thing is there's only eight or nine members left in the world. They're very small. I understand that Alpheus Cutler was a polygamist, but then when he started his own church, he dropped that. And so supposedly that's kind of a touchy subject with them because they don't support polygamy. But the interesting thing about the Cutlerites is they've just got a two-story church, basically. It's a white building, and they do baptism. They're one of the few groups that does baptism for the dead. And when I talked with I believe her name was Virginia, I asked about ceilings. They do not do ceilings for the dead, but they do ceilings for the living.
Hmm.
And so they are one of the few groups that actually have an endowment like the LDS Church does. In fact, they might be, I won't say they're the only one, but they're one of the only ones that date from Joseph Smith's day. Some of the polygamous groups do, but this is one of the few that date from that time. Because like Community of Christ, they've got the community, they've got the Kirtland Temple, and then they've got the one in Independence. And those are open buildings. They're open to the public. Anybody can go. They're very quiet, reflective buildings, but they don't have any endowment. Basically, they've rejected the endowment and the sealing ceremony. And so the Cutlerites are really interesting. You know, they're very tight-lipped about their temple service, but supposedly it is more similar to the original endowment than the LDS Church's endowment ceremonies.
So the mainstream, really, the Brighamite Church.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Interesting. We just got real church nerdy there for a second. I just want you to...
We did. I'm sorry. I can't help it.
A fascinating project idea that I have thought for a million years, and I just don't think that I'm ever going to do it. I wish that someone would do a podcast that starts chronologically from the time of either the formation of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints or somewhere around there, maybe at the death of the prophet Joseph Smith, and went and did an episode about every single breakoff of each of the churches from the time of Joseph Smith. Now, that's a lot. I think it's like 120, 150 plus.
It's more like 400.
Okay, more like 400. That's a lot of podcast episodes. I'm going to dangle that out there for someone else to do. I've thought it'd be a great idea. I think some of them would be far easier than the others, but it is interesting to note because, as you said, kind of going into that, we sort of follow the narrative of like, Joseph Smith was martyred, and then, in our mind, I think we kind of create this thing that it's like, and then Brigham Young, a short time afterwards, was called to be the prophet, and we went west. And anyone that didn't follow that, we kind of go, yeah, I wonder what happened to Emma. I wonder what happened to the other folks. And we just kind of follow it here to Utah. There's tons to be learned and gained from that.
Oh, there is so much.
I want to take a quick break. I want to come back in the second block, and I want to continue where we're at with Rick Bennett talking about whatever we want. We're going to talk about whatever we want, and we'll come back and do that in the second block of the Cultural Hall.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Richie Stedman of the Cultural Hall podcast. You should definitely check it out. It's a great podcast. In our next conversation, we're going to talk about some Mormon history groups.
These are a lot of the different branches of Mormonism. And so I know he's got Alpheus Cutler. Down here is Gordon B. Hinckley. So you can see these big dots are the mainstream LDS church, basically. But he's got, I can't even see this here.
I'll make the cover available for people to see in the show notes so they can see what we're talking about. This is a fantastic book. Scattering of the Saints, Schism Within Mormonism. So...
It kind of gives you a visual of how many different schisms there are, but this isn't even close. Steve Shields is another guy that I've interviewed, and he's the one who's documented over 400 different groups.
If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please subscribe for just $5 a month at patreon.com/gospeltangents, and you can hear the entire interview before everybody else. If you'd like to watch the entire video for just $8 a month, you can either subscribe on YouTube, Patreon, or my website, gospeltangents.com. Just click the yellow subscribe button, and I'll add you to our Gospel Tangents Insiders group so that you can see entire videos. For those interested in a PDF transcript, you can subscribe at either Patreon or on my website. For just $10 a month, I'll send you a PDF as soon as it's complete. If you'd like a copy of the paperback as well as a PDF, just sign up for $20 a month at either Patreon or my website, gospeltangents.com. Of course, you can buy individual transcripts at amazon.com and just do a search for Gospel Tangents Interview, and you can see all the things that we have there. Don't forget to support Gospel Tangents with an awesome t-shirt like one of these. You can subscribe at Apple Podcasts at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents. Get our latest updates at facebook.com/gospeltangents. Also, you can get our Twitter updates at gospeltangents. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got more of our great videos. Thanks again.